Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, September 3rd, 10:04 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today, we're doing news, taking calls, and talking with Jeff Karras, owner of Lava Rock Internet Cafe in Santa Cruz, across from Linda Seabreeze. During the second half of the show, we'll welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and click on Send a Message. There's a Contact Us link. I added a Contact Us link, so go to geekspeak.org, click on Contact Us, fill out that form. That'll get in our email box, and I'll be giving out all that contact information again when I invite you to participate in about a half an hour. Welcome to Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and John Tracy. We're going to be talking with Jeff Karras in just a moment about, well, the internet cafe that he has, Lava Rock, on Seabright, and about what services they have and why they're open and what they're doing and some classes that are coming up. So stick with us. But first, let's do some news. Sean, I'd like to start with you, sir.
Good morning. Yeah, Philadelphia has become the first Wi-Fi for all city.
Major city, huh?
Yeah, major city. A lot of smaller cities have offered wireless access, including Chaska, a suburb of Minneapolis. It's about 13 square miles. Corpus Christi, Texas has been experimenting with it. Even in Cleveland, there are about 4,000 transmitters. Wow. And it's University Circle, Midtown, so on. But Philadelphia will become the first city where wireless access is available everywhere.
Now, is it a free service to people in the city, or is there a...
They would like to offer the service for free.
Or, wouldn't everyone?
I don't think it's really clear yet if that's going to be possible or not. But they said the cost will be far lower than the $35 to $60 a month that's charged by commercial providers.
It's interesting. You'd think that a major city like that would really get a lot of negative feedback from the businesses that have ISPs in the area. I mean, it seems like it would kind of destroy an ISP.
You would think, yeah.
You would think. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Sean, for that little update. Miles, I know you've got a whole lot of news this morning, so what's your top pick?
My top pick is that MIT has named its first woman president. Susan Hockfield will be the first woman president in MIT's history, as well as the first president they've had that's had a background in the life sciences, as opposed to engineering, which is what MIT is predominantly known for.
Great. Thanks for that update. John, hi.
Hi, good morning. In Apple news, we have Apple finally released their G5 iMacs.
This might have been the most...
The most known about release that Apple has ever had. Yeah,
there's absolutely a lot of like rumors. We're talking about the rumors that it's going to be a all-in-one computer. It's going to look like a monitor
There's been a lot of news about this, about the lack of G5 processors, but they're out.
They're not shipping for 4
right,
weeks.
Availability is... end of September, early October.
And in lengthening every day, I'm sure, as people order them.
Yeah, we shall see. I know that IBM's having trouble with the 90-nanometer technology, which is what they use to make the G5 chips.
Right.
So, you know, and to IBM's credit, they're the leaders in this, and everybody's having problems with 90-nanometer scale chip design.
You know, it's interesting because this Macintosh, of course, is a first rev of a new product, and... John, I've heard from you multiple times that don't get the first rev of Mac stuff. Is that right?
That's typical pretty much of anything that's got a lot of new technology in it. Fortunately, the G5 chip's fairly stable. LCD technology is fairly stable.
It's not the first release of the G5, and it's not the first release of the LCD.
Right, so there's a lot of known technologies that they're putting together, which, you know, is fine. I'm curious to see how it's going to be heat-wise, since it's an all-in-one design. It's an enclosed cabinet. It draws air in through the speaker grills, and it uses the chimney effect, similar to the older...
Cube.
Clear IMAX. Yeah, or
and
the Cube.
The Cube,
it does have fans in it. They're supposed to be ultra-quiet fans. I'm interested to see what they look like. They've got one that's got a 20-inch LCD screen, which is huge.
And the smallest they come in is 17-inch, which is a Depart as
right.
well.
And the prices start at under $1,300.
Yeah. Now, this iMac, basically, to give it an idea of what it looks like a thick LCD screen. That's it. And it even has a wireless keyboard and mouse option.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that's using Bluetooth, but we don't know exactly yet. And, of course, it's got a whole bunch of ports on the back. FireWire, FireWire 2, USB 2.
Right.
It looks like a pretty stacked machine, and it kind of feels to me like a laptop without a keyboard. That's what it kind of looks like.
It is made to be semi-portable.
Yeah.
They talk about how it doesn't weigh that much, so you can pick it up and pull it around. Two things I see lacking, though. Ethernet is 10/100 instead of gigabit, which is a departure, because even my laptop has gigabit. And the graphics card is an NVIDIA GeForce FX 5200 that only has 64 megabytes of RAM, and you can't upgrade it at all. So
in this day of gaming,
when 128 cards are pretty much becoming the norm, and 256 cards are out, are they out, Sean? Can you get a 256 card for a PC yet?
Oh, yeah. You can go 512.
512. Yeah. So it seems like 64 megabyte video
cards. It's kind of small.
Yeah.
The other thing that I don't like personally is slot loading CDs. I like tray loading CDs, and it's got a slot loading on the side of this thing. And they're a little trickier. If you put in mini discs or credit card discs,
they're gone
and stuck in the machine. It's a total nightmare.
Yeah, you have to take apart the drive to get there.
All right, so we'll cover that again when we actually see one of these in about a month. Thank you, John, for that. Sean?
IBM has recalled 553,000 laptop power units.
Wow.
These units are primarily for the IBM ThinkPad I series, the ThinkPad 390 and 240 series, and a limited number of ThinkPad S series.
Why are they recalling them?
Because they can damage the circuit board, melt through the case, and possibly even overheat.
So it's not just Apple's that are making the melting down laptops this year.
And these computers are for... This is four computers sold between January of 1999 and August of 2000. It's quite a bit.
That's a while ago.
That's a while ago, yeah. So if you have one of these, go to adapterprogram.com.
Adapterprogram.com. Okay, thank you very much for that update. Miles.
The National Institute of Standards and Technology has unveiled a chip-size atomic clock. In other words, it's a clock that will have the equivalent of gaining or losing just 1 second every 300 years, uses only 75 thousandths of a watt to operate, and is about the size of a grain of rice.
Wow.
It means that
that's
basically
cool.
As these become, it's assumed that this would become a mass market type of thing. It means that you'll start seeing clocks, wristwatches that are never wrong.
Wetware.
Wow, very cool.
Does that mean you can?
Or you could put it on the skin.
Can you put one of these in a microwave or VCR so when the power goes out and power comes back on, it won't just be blinking 12?
Wouldn't that be nice?
Now, wait a minute. It's never wrong, or it's just highly accurate? Because if it's set wrong, it's wrong.
It'll be wrong.
Is there a way that it can sync to?
Well, assuming you hooked it up to a GPS system.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, a clock system, not really.
Well, yeah.
But basically, the low wattage and the precision, you said 1 second every how many years?
Every about 300 years.
Okay, so you don't have to set that very often.
Not so much.
So basically you set that once, and then you're set.
Mm-hmm. And so it's 75 thousandths of a watt to operate, which means that even if you had a standard watch battery, the LCD to display the time is going to take much more time than actually keeping the time.
You might want to leave a note for your great-great-great-grandchildren.
Let
them know
to
adjust the time for that second.
I think it's going to start a new trend where you'll wear a lemon peel against your skin to power it.
Right, exactly. Use your body.
The kinetic energy, your normal movement.
That new voice is Jeff Karras, our guest, who will be talking about Lava Rock in just a few minutes with. But thank you, Jeff, for the idea of
Lava Rock is an internet cafe.
Yes.
Not the rockets.
That's right. Let's see, where were we on news items?
I think it's mine.
Okay.
I think it's my turn.
Go for it, John.
Next week on the 8th, there's going to be a capture of a satellite. And instead of using the space shuttle this year, or this time, NASA is going to use helicopter stunt pilots. There's a satellite called Genesis that's been collecting solar wind particles, and they're bringing it back down to Earth in a controlled drop. They did an insertion maneuver last weekend that went fine. They're doing a follow-on maneuver on the 6th, which means they're basically getting it ready to to enter into the atmosphere, and then it's going to drop. It's got a couple of parachutes that are going to slow it way down, and then they're going to use the helicopter to pick it up.
Why are they just letting it land on the ground or in water?
That's a good question. They don't actually.
Maybe they have helicopters,
that.
And it'd be kind of fun.
I think that they're worried about damaging the payload, maybe damaging the space. Well, obviously, they don't really care about spacecraft so much anymore, but maybe it's going
to
damage the payload.
First thought is something coming in from orbit above, helicopters coming to get it. Helicopters have
rotors on the top.
Yeah, so, like, you know, how does that work?
Yeah.
Kind of like, we're going to get it in pieces?
No. It's falling. It's going to be slowed way down via parachutes, and then it's going to release, and the helicopter has a catch net. And they're going to try
and catch
it. It's
like a big baseball mitt.
Wait, like two helicopters have a net between them?
No. There's a single helicopter doing it. We'll see. They're going to be doing a shakedown next week.
This is crazy.
Before it happens. So
this is
going to be very
insane.
Well filmed. Yeah. Now, it's one of those.
So that's the 8th of September?
The 8th of September.
Okay,
so,
do you know what time of day it is?
Let me see. This is all from space.com. Yeah. It's going to enter the atmosphere at 9:55 a.m. local mountain time. 2 minutes and 7 seconds after atmospheric reentry, while still flying supersonically, the capsule will deploy a drug chute at 108,000 feet, and then it'll just deploy a parafoil at 20,000 feet.
Wow.
So waiting. Oh, here we go. Waiting below will be two helicopters. So you're right.
With a big net in between them.
Snare, yeah. Should be interesting to see.
Weird.
That's our tax dollars at work.
All right, good. And we're basically getting some pieces of space debris.
Solar debris. Yeah,
okay,
solar wind particles.
Good. Thank you, John. Miles?
Yes, there's some talk between the Federal Communications Commission, the FAA, and the various airlines to get cell phones working on flights.
Yay, you can annoy your passengers.
So all those folks that, you know, just before the plane takes off, you're like, you know, turn them all off in a hurry and you lose internet access and the like. Well, they're looking at ways of, allowing you to make phone calls from on a plane.
Do you think planes will now start having, like, cell phone and non-cell phone seating areas like they used to do with smoking?
There's a company called AirCell of Louisville, Colorado, who has been working on a system that works with TDMA, CDMA, and GSM, the three major carrier types in the U.S., to basically they would have a receiver inside the aircraft would catch all of the cell phone signals and then relay them from the plane from a single source down to the ground.
That makes more sense, because I thought it was like as you're flying by cell towers, you know, you're like, location, new location, always getting dropped.
So wait a minute, I thought the cell signal could...
Could interfere
with navigation.
There was always some issue with that. But from what I understood, it was that there were some unexplained crashes or problems, and they didn't know what happened. And the only common variable they could see in those crashes was that there were people talking on cell phones at the time.
You know,
that there wasn't a direct.
But if they're making money off it, then it's okay.
If they're making money off it, it's okay, because then the airline can stay in business. So the thing is with the cell phone, you know, any kind of transmitter on a plane is a bad idea unless it's the plane's. I mean, you can't have a really piece of expensive equipment. You got some people in there that want to live. And so there's kind of this idea that let's just make sure everything's off, make sure it's all clean. And that's why they've been doing it, I think. And now they're saying, you know, we don't have to have this off. We know what the frequencies are going to be. We know what cell phones do. We'll just allow them and it'll be okay. And it probably will.
You know what's next then?
And you can call your pilot and be like, hey.
the next thing would be Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that would be – okay, that would be much better, because then people could be quiet on their computer while typing away.
Yeah, one of the things they are talking about is also offering internet access. So that to me is a lot more useful.
That's much more.
They're not a cell phone dial-up speeds.
And speaking of internet access, Jeff, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you.
Jeff is owner and operator of Lava Rock Cafe, Internet Cafe. It's on Seabright in Santa Cruz, right across from Linda's Seabreeze. Actually – Jeff, you have your parent company, if you will, is Ignis Group, web development and kind of services group, technology group. And you used to have Ignis Group in that location with a webcam going across to Seabreeze.
We still have that.
Still have that, okay. So the URLs to know about Ignis Group and about Lava Rock would be, well, just go to lavarock.com. That's definitely the public face, lavarockcafe.com. And, Jeff, you've got Internet Cafe. There's a few of them in Santa Cruz. You're kind of unique, I think, in that you're a standalone. I mean, you started as an Internet Cafe, didn't start as a coffee shop and kind of migrate in. It's definitely Internet Cafe. And some things that you have different, you've got printing and scanning and some other features of that nature. And you're starting to do classes now.
That's right.
What I want to talk to you about. So on the 8th, after the helicopter catches that thing coming from space. what's going on at Lava Rock?
Well, assuming it doesn't come down at the cafe, we'll be just fine. We're doing digital photography classes, and Art Duran, whose artwork and photography is at the cafe right now, is doing a class, and that is a paid class. Most of the classes we try to offer technology classes that are free, mm-hmm. and introduce people and welcome them to use the technology that we have at the cafe.
So it's a couple of things that he'll be covering. 15 most common errors and their fixes using digital photography. Sounds like a good list. Verify and rebuild data utility. That's kind of interesting. I don't, does that have to do... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm reading the wrong event. That was the September 2nd event.
Yeah.
So let's skip down to Art Duran's photography course. And he's going to be talking about equipment, choosing camera. Cool. Digital terminology, pixels, I'm assuming file formats, things of that nature.
Sure.
So it's a good intro class to, you have a digital camera and you've been dealing with taking pictures and now you kind of want to take that next step of doing figuring out what to do with them. It's relatively reasonable prices, and you can learn more by going to lavarockcafe.com. Why did you open a storefront, a cafe?
Well, the long and short of it is that we had too much office space as Igneous Group, and we wanted to utilize that space in a positive way, and we didn't want to tear down our volcano. So there's a 10-foot tall volcano in the middle of the facility, and we're crying about losing that, so we decided to open the Internet Cafe, and of course, hence the name Lava Rock.
Now, that volcano, just to be really clear, is not an actual active, real volcano, but you built it.
Oh, it is active.
Oh, it
is
active.
Every night it goes off. That's
cool.
Right. Yeah. See, on the T-shirt, it even says, experience the eruption.
Cool. All right, so...
I always thought that was like a caffeine thing.
Well...
Something else.
Okay, hey, whatever.
Double on time.
And it's closer to the Mirage.
That's right.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
What time does it go off?
6 o'clock.
Okay.
It starts going at 6 o'clock.
Now, you're open from 8 to 10 every day, which is a lot of hours. It was kind of nice to come in on the way here trying to figure out if I could reach you.
Yeah.
say, Jeff, come on the show. Talk about it. I went in, and you were open and got a mocha.
Good.
And great service. I mean, always open kind of thing. The cafe has wireless, as, of course, Internet Cafe at this point does, but it also has Ethernet. And why do you do that?
We have actually significant technology, and that's from the Igneous Group background. We have A, B, and G wireless, and we can also do wired into our wall. We authenticate with the same accounts wireless, and if you're using our computers. So if you came in, you had an account with us, and you decide, oh, I don't have my laptop, or my battery's gone, or I just need to do something different, then you can hop on one of our computers and do color printing or scanning or create a CD or a DVD.
So you do have burning capabilities in there?
We sure do.
What about scanning capabilities?
Yeah, we have a scanner, and that's already been used several times. So.
Now, the features of scanning and burning CDs, they'll have costs associated with them, and computer use time has costs associated with them?
Is that there's one mega system that's our kind of gaming system that has the scanner on it and the DVD and CD burners on it. That has... That's our more expensive set of computers, which is $10 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still pretty reasonable.
Now, that's if you're using a machine that's there, but if you bring your own machine in, no cost, just get a drink?
What we say is it's $1 a day, or if you buy anything, it's free.
Okay.
So we have a pretty low bar,
right.
And we want to make it easy for everybody, but we also want people to understand that it's costing us something. So.
Okay, Jeff, when you're there, you're a geek, when you're there and someone comes in, they got a problem with their laptop, you help them? What do you charge for that?
Smile.
Really? They have to smile?
Yeah, they have to smile. If they're not smiling, then... You know,
I don't know. We get
out.
Some callers sometime that are definitely having trouble. They're not smiling.
Well, I look at it this way. Where, you know, people have a lot of different problems with their computers. There's been a couple computers that have been so messed up that I can't get them on our network.
Mm-hmm.
But that's rare. We've created over 1,000 accounts and... had a lot of people in, both Mac and PC and Linux machines, and been able to get most, you know, 99% on our network. So,
now, let's say they're having like a word problem. I mean, are you there to kind of help out in that regard?
If I'm around, I mean, I'm not going to be there for 3 hours worth of consulting, but I'll spend 5 minutes with people if I have time.
Cool.
And, you know, we have a couple of technical people that can help. And I think that's what it's about. And that part of it I really enjoy is building the community and helping people with what we know.
What about the Ignis Group? Are you still doing the Ignis Group pretty?
Yeah, Ignis Group is actually going very strong right now. We're kind of busy through the end of the year.
What kind of things do you do?
Right now, we're building a very large facility for University of Southern California. We're building their new admissions facilities, and that's really exciting.
That's a major undertaking.
It is a major undertaking, yeah.
So how many engineers do you work on that?
We have about four engineering staff working on that full-time right now.
And this is GeekSpeak. What kind of technologies are you using in the back end?
We use SQL Server, Microsoft SQL Server. Our facilities are Cold Fusion-based. We like Cold Fusion. We have a platform called Exec that has full content management, and actually LavaRockCafe.com and Igneous.com are early examples of that.
And that's Cold Fusion as well?
That is all Cold Fusion.
But you built the content management system on top of that?
Yes. Okay. That's correct.
So that's an Ignis piece that people purchase when they get services from you?
Yeah. Typically when we build a site, what's neat about it is that I can go to the site and make a change in, you know, minutes.
Right.
Very simple.
Now, why Cold Fusion? Like, did it just, you've been using it for long enough now where that's the one you're using?
There were some open source facilities, but the bottom line is that we needed something that has the right price performance. And maintenance is a component of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to have the whole picture for our clients. And many of our clients don't have webmasters or don't have technology folks.
Right.
So if they're faced with managing something that's more complex, that means we have to be more involved. And we really like to empower our clients to manage their own destiny.
Yeah. Now, content management systems are pretty common nowadays for large sites. You kind of have to do it. Because it used to be that you'd have just a webmaster and then it would do the pages. But now there's so much content online that a skilled person that has HTML experience just can't, it's not cost effective to keep them going on updating pages manually. Sean?
We have an email about, with a question for LavaRock.
Okay. Please.
Actually, so this came in, and if you have a question, you can go to geekspeak.org, click on the geeks, and
click on contact us, actually, add a new link.
Contact us. So the question is, do you let me drink coffee at your computers? What happens
yes.
if it spills in the computer?
Well, usually we chop off people's fingers one by one.
Good.
So
next
question.
You have
10 opportunities.
So people know when somebody's spilled.
We do let you drink coffee, and we do let you spill crumbs in our keyboard, and we ask that you try to be careful.
And you replace keyboards every once in a while.
Yeah. And so.
And they're $20, and who cares?
Yeah. And that's pretty much. You know, the library is fanatical about, you know, water near our computer. Oh, my God. And we just say, well, you know, you're living your life. You want to sit down and hang out and enjoy it.
And the computer is underneath the table?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you theoretically, I mean, have you had any bad damage going on besides
none.
The keyboard?
None.
Okay. People are pretty good about that kind of thing. My father last year spilled within a week a full cup of water on two keyboards, destroying them. They're Mac keyboards. They're impossible to open and clean or dry out. And it's something that happens. But keyboards aren't that expensive.
Yeah.
It's true. It's kind of like, you know, if you're going to a cafe, I mean, you want to have your coffee.
You know, when I was at Max PC Mag, I was reviewing a compact notebook, and I spilled a whole cup of coffee into the notebook while it was on, while I was using it. And I, not only that, I had cream and sugar in it, too.
Oh, geez. So you had to go out back and hose it down.
So I pretty much did that. I'm like, well, it's already wet, so I kind of put it under the sink, you know, and washed it out.
Did you write an article?
I put it upside down. And a fan blowing at it for 2 days and just let it dry out and fire it up.
Did you shut it down or did you just pop the battery?
No, I shut it right down. Right away I unplugged it.
So did you include that in your write-up?
Well,
remember you're on the radio saying that.
Yeah.
The approved method.
You know, it's funny because we were using the notebook. We weren't doing a review on the notebook. We were using it for a feature. So it didn't make sense to talk about that. And I told Compaq, you know, that I'd be willing to write a quote for them if they ever wanted to.
Well, now you've told.
I guess they didn't want that aspect.
Yeah.
I just got lucky, but the notebook worked perfect. The keys were kind of stuck a little, but they finally came loose.
After you broke the seal,
you know, it's kind of a common. Yeah. It's kind of a common thing. I mean, my titanium notebook, which is actually part of owned by my employer UCSC, my son spilled a really big cup of Coke on it once, a long time ago, about a year ago, and it still has a sticky button.
I remember that.
There.
Yeah,
I mean, my space bar is kind of like, yeah, it works sometimes. So, you know, you plug in an external
keyboard. Terrible. Your coffee was pouring out of the speakers, you know, and this is it.
So that's kind of nightmares haven't really happened to you
but
yet.
But it still worked.
But even if it does, you're probably just
going to lose people spill on the keyboard, and we can wipe it off, and exactly as, you know, you clean it up and do the
work.
And I got 10 keyboards in the back, so don't let everybody get the idea now, but you know,
cool. It's Lava Rocks, great. I just dumped coffee on the keyboard. It was so cool. Yeah. And he gave me another keyboard. No, so that's not something you want to feature. But I do like there's kind of a collection of things you can do. Slide scanning, actually, kind of interesting. I recently went through some trouble trying to scan a slide, and most photo bureaus will actually do it for you at a certain cost per slide, but I'm assuming you charge more by the hour that you're on the machine kind of thing.
I've tried to make it really reasonable. Mm-hmm. I don't charge. That actual system is the same as the other ones, and
right.
It has the scanner and the slide scanner on it. We have computers that have 7-way card readers, so
right.
You can come in with your digital card reader. And we had somebody come in from the UK. He had his camera was full, and he said, "I need to cut a CD," you know. And so
no problem.
He was able to come in, dump his information out of his.
I like that feature. I mean, most good photo places will deal that for you. You give them the media, and they'll burn your CD. But it's normally, you know, give them the piece of media, and they'll keep it overnight or for 3 hours, and then they'll give it back to you.
Yeah.
And you can't interaction with it. And if you're a geek and you're like, you know, I want to be doing this myself.
Sure.
I just don't happen to have a computer with me, or I do it. So it's nice to have that kind of feature set.
Yeah, you want to be able to review what you had.
Yeah.
Now, exactly. What kinds of computers do you have there?
We have primarily PCs.
Okay.
Actually, we have no Mac, sorry. They're all Windows XP, and we have one super fast one. That
I noticed that. It's
water-cooled.
Yeah,
that's right.
Oh, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Is it really fast? What's the speed?
It's 3 gigahertz.
Cool.
Yeah, and it's got lots of memory, and that's the one we're going to use for gaming, and it's got Flight Simulator on it, and we want to do fun things with it. And we also, for presentations and things, we have an LCD projector.
Oh, nice.
Come in, and there's a slight fee for that because the bulbs are $500.
Yeah. Ouch.
Yeah, exactly. But we try to, we want people to feel like they have meetings, and people can call and reserve a space there for free.
Oh, okay.
As long as they show up, that's good.
And these classes you're actually doing in there, you're trying to make them mostly free, but a few of them you're actually paying the person that's coming in to speak.
Actually, we're not paying anybody.
Oh, okay.
We're trying to be neutral about that. So we try to have people come in. We have the SPOT computer training come
mm-hmm.
in. They're doing classes. And they're, you know, the deal is that they want to show how good their classes are. So they come in and they've been doing little prototype classes. They've been doing a quick series that just finished up last night. And that's been very successful. And we're doing, Art Duran has been doing the photography. We've had things like John Laird has come and presented there. And we want to do more technology things that use technology and community. I want to really build.
How about like a build your own computer kind of thing? Have you done any of those?
I haven't done that. I'm interested in doing that. You know, that's a fun thing to do, and I'm sure anything that people are interested in and something that we can support.
You want to support technology community stuff going
yep,
on.
You bet.
Great. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
The Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana presents their second annual WAM Fest with fun, food, and fundraising from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday, September 5th at the San Lorenzo Park Benchlands. Information is at 425-0580.
This week on This American Life, for 6 years, dishwasher Pete rode the Greyhound bus everywhere. And no matter what went wrong, late buses, nasty smells, crying babies, parents hitting their kids in the seat next to him, he loved riding the bus. Until 1 7-day trip from Portland to Phoenix and back.
Sometimes I would rather shoot this dog than ride it.
The romance of the road and what it takes to kill it. This week on This American Life from Public Radio International.
Hear This American Life Sunday morning at 10 right after Car Talk on KUSP.
They've all been upgraded to 933.
This program is supported by a grant from Cruise Out, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL, now with nationwide access. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruiseio.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio KSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Miles Elam, John Tracy, and Sean Cleveland. We're talking with with Jeff about Lava Rock Cafe. You're welcome to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 1-800-476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can go to geekspeak.org to contact us through email if you would like. We can take any calls you would like about anything. The phone numbers, again, 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877.
Got an instant message from... Well, once my mic is up. Got an instant message from Dee Dee asking, do you guys have any security issues at Lava Rock? Any problems with viruses and the like?
Yeah, we have lots of problems with viruses.
yeah, you've got Windows machines in there.
Well, we have the world in there, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
They're everywhere, and it's not. I don't think it's one platform versus another. Mm-hmm. We have an enterprise virus scanning system there. We have multiple firewalls. Knock on wood. We had to make that knock loud. We're trying very hard to keep on keep our systems clean, and we haven't had any problems yet.
How many machines do you have in there? I mean, you have the public machines, you also have a server. I mean, how many machines are you doing?
We have 9 public machines, and we have 2 more machines. We have an MP3 server there for the music, and we have a centralized computer that manages our authentication facilities for both sides of the house, both the wireless and the LAN.
And those are all running Windows?
Yeah, and the reason we chose Windows is that when people use our computers and they save something on their desktop and they come back a week later and they use a different machine, it'll show up on their desktop.
So you're storing some stuff for them?
You bet. Yeah, it's really nice.
Wow, how much storage do you have then? I mean, how much storage are you offering to these customers?
We have allocated about 20 megabytes per person. That's what we're thinking.
Okay, that's pretty good. I mean, it's good for, you know, Word documents and the like.
Yeah.
You can't save your whole photo, photo collection. But
yeah. Well, for $6 an hour, it's tough to
really get all your stuff
make
on.
It all work out.
We've got 2 emails. One's from Rebecca, who's asking, what kind of training events do you have, and do you teach about computers?
We are really interested in all sorts of training events. We want to have input from you, so help us out. So you can use, there's an info form at Lava Rock, or send something on GeekSpeak, and we'd love to hear from you and understand what you want to see, because that's the kind of training we want to have.
And the lineup of things that you have in your events calendar, you just finished the, last night, mm-hmm. You just finished the QuickBooks thing with the spot, and then on the 8th you're having Art Duran, photographer, talk about digital photography, and then on the 7th of October, you've got the spot coming in again, talk about QuickBooks. But if you got a couple calls about, you know, I really just want to know how to use a computer in general, you could probably whip up a class for that?
You bet.
Okay.
Yeah.
So since people that don't have a computer connection, that want to learn how to use a computer, how do they contact you?
They can come in to the cafe, which we'd prefer.
541 Seabright Avenue.
Yeah. Or they can email or call. There's contact information on our site, and there's a way to communicate with us.
And the phone number is 831-427-5282. Again, 427-5282. We've got a call from Carmel Valley. Oh, and it's going to take a second for me to pop this up.
I got to say, it's 427-LAVA.
Oh, yes, LAVA. 427-LAVA. Carolyn, welcome.
Yeah, hi. I have a question for you guys. Do you guys know anything about these election computers coming up? And what I want to know is, technically, how feasible is it for someone to break in? And
affect the vote?
Yeah, affect the vote. And then if it's easy, you know, which I want to know how easy it is, maybe expert geeks need to talk to the representatives and talk to them about, you know, how this is going to take place, because I think a lot of people are very concerned about this.
Well, there's a lot of debate about it. Of course, every time an election comes around, there's a lot of debate about the new boxes. One of our geeks, John here, strongly believes that people should be using pencils and paper. Jeff, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think in Florida we found out that no technology is people-proof.
Yeah.
Silly.
But when it comes down to breaking in, that's not normally the issue with election systems. Miles, you study a little bit of election systems and you're a computer programmer. What are your thoughts?
It has to do with, more with the people involved with it. It's not so much worrying about hackers getting in and changing the results remotely. It's more the worry that people will who have physical access to the box will go in and change the results afterwards, that someone just won't like what are
or beforehand. Precinct is. Some of these systems, these that actually run inside them, we don't know how they work. They're owned and copyrighted and by a company that created it. And theoretically, if that company had an ulterior motive, or if there was a bug in the system, it could sway the vote count.
Right, there is that issue if there are bugs. And that's one thing that a lot of people want to have implemented is a code review to give it to, you know, a bunch of computer scientists around the country and to go through the code line by line to be able to say, this is how this works. Oh, there's a problem here. We should fix that. But many amenable to that, they want to have their source code.
If it's in the interest of a national election, I mean, that kind of goes above and beyond one company.
Right. If memory serves, there was something going on in Florida where a judge had ruled that there had to be some type of paper audit trail attached to them.
We're not concerned at all about like a remote hacker going changing the vote on 1,000 of these machines, but we would be concerned about the software having problems or the company that produces the software implementing something that's problematic. It's the feeling of, wow, I don't know if my vote's really being counted because there's nothing, there's no physical, tangible thing that I interact with except for this interface everyone else is interacting with, and a few bits are changed. So that's a little weird. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I just think that this is more scrutiny than the voting system has gotten ever.
Yeah,
and
sure.
So,
good, probably.
Yeah, which is a good thing. But I think, you know, if you look at what can happen with our existing system, this is just new and different. So it's an opportunity to scrutinize it.
Right. Yeah, that was thinking. It was the same thing. There has never been an election where that was paper based, or that has that has gone without any type of irregularity or the like. So this is just a new medium for that. At the same time, electronic voting allows for things like accessibility, having very large fonts for people who are visually impaired, or having
and training for the poll workers so they know how to use them and reset the machines if they need to.
Yeah, or text-to-speech where someone can plug in a headphone as opposed to having someone with them in the booth to read them the ballot.
Well, and consistency to have them the same everywhere.
Carlisle, does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's good. And, this thing about the code review is very interesting. And then, you know, I'm just wondering if some of, you know, our prominent geeks in the, you know, San Francisco Bay Area and Monterey Bay can talk to our representatives and make sure, I guess, that there's a paper trail, you know, and use it their expertise. Because it's hard for average people who aren't, you know, I'm not that efficient on a computer and
to understand
not
the technology,
my area, you know. So anyway, thanks, guys. Good job.
Thank you very much, Carla.
I do want to say one thing. This is John, the guy who advocates the paper and pencil method. There in Australia, they had an election that was, by and large, done with electronic voting machines, and it went without a snag. So
the same thing in India as well.
Yeah.
India had to deal with, like, hundreds of languages, too. It was I think they actually ended up with, like, 19 that they actually had on the system, but
I don't know about the Indian one, but the one in Australia was done using open source
software,
and now there's a big controversy because they want to privatize it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big controversy about that.
From Monterey, we've got Garland again. Welcome back to Geek Speak, Garland.
Hi there. First of all, I want to say I'm with John. Paper and pencils. Paper and pencils. And that's where you got to go with the book.
Can you speak up, Garland?
My question, how's that? Is that any better?
A little better.
My question is, has to do something completely different. It's a PowerPoint type question, cross-platform question.
All right.
I'm trying to put a video clip into a PowerPoint presentation. For some reason, it's not taking the QuickTime files that were made on a Mac, and I'm trying to do it on a PC with the PowerPoint.
And that's going
to
be huge. QuickTime is like one of the larger formats. That's going to add a lot of size to your PowerPoint presentation.
Did you make these QuickTime files?
I did not personally. I mean, I know the guy who did it. He captured it. I watched him do it.
Mm-hmm. And can you play them on your Windows machine?
I can play them on the Windows, yes.
And what happens when you import them into PowerPoint?
It basically just sort of sits there like nothing's happening, and it just nothing happens.
And that's a problem?
yeah.
I've actually worked with that feature. And I tried a QuickTime. I didn't spend too much time because I was actually taking a piece of raw digital video and then turning it into various different.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried MPEG and QuickTime and AVI, and I found MPEG to be the best compatible. Yeah.
Now,
the most compatible with PowerPoint?
QuickTime file is an MPEG file, isn't it?
That That's what I thought. Isn't that a quick
memory? Yeah, MOV file is an impact. John, is that? We're kind of all looking and furrowing our brows.
Well, QuickTime is a wrapper around whatever codec you happen to be using at the time. So MPEG may be a common codec that they use inside the wrapper. But
update your QuickTime player on that machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's very possible that PowerPoint's going to be using the libraries of the QuickTime player to play that. And maybe they need to be the most updated. That's the first thing to do, because that's the easiest.
I did that already. Okay.
Yeah, I have a feeling it has more to do with PowerPoint.
I think so. I think and make sure you get the most recent version of PowerPoint. You can go to windowsupdate.microsoft.com, and up at the top you can find the Office update. Make sure you get the most recent
version.
That might
be, that's something to check out.
Is 2003 the latest version?
Well, that's version of Office, but
if that's what you're running,
but it shipped with over 2,000 known bugs, and there are two service packs out for Office 2003.
The other thing is if you play the movie, when you launch the movie, does it play within a browser, for instance, which means that it can play within one of the other Office apps, or does it have to play in the QuickTime?
Right. Like, if you take the QuickTime file and you open Internet Explorer and drop the QuickTime file on top of Internet Explorer, does it just play it right in the browser?
That I don't know. I hadn't tried to do that.
That's a great idea, Jeff. Test that will mean that at least Microsoft can play things as in a plug-in fashion, if you will.
Got it.
Which you need for PowerPoint.
And so then after all that fails, Darlin, then what you want
to
do
is
go get a Mac.
re-encode this QuickTime file.
Okay, that's what I'm wondering. As a matter of fact, that's what I'm doing right now. I'm testing it. I'm with Video Studio 8 by Ouliad. I'm turning, I'm rendering it into a MPEG-2.
The
media encoder is free from Microsoft. You can download that and re-encode it into a variety of different formats that will be very Microsoft happy.
And the Windows media file format will probably be the most happy.
Is this a very high-res video?
I think it is, yeah. It's a pretty big file.
Then if it's high-res, you want to use MPEG 2. If it's like TV quality, MPEG 1 is plenty.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got a better compression for...
It is, and also the file is MOV is the extension on the end of it.
Yeah. Right, because that's a QuickTime file.
So that's probably part of my problem then here, I imagine.
Yeah, it's very possible. I mean, it should be supported if everything's running right. But if you go ahead and go to a Microsoft encoding paradigm like Windows Media Player, that's the way to go, because you'll know that Microsoft tested it that way.
Gotcha. And where on Microsoft will I find that encoder?
Jeff, how does someone download that free Microsoft encoder?
I would search for Windows Media Encoder on Microsoft's site. I don't remember the URL.
Okay, but that's what it's called, Windows Media Encoder.
Yeah,
Windows Media Encoder.
And the latest version is freely downloadable, and it actually works well. I've done quite a bit of coding with it.
I love having new geeks on the show, because I didn't know that. So thank you, Jeff Karras, who's our guest today from Lava Rock.
Thank you very much,
thank you, Garland, very much for the call.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot, guys.
If you'd like to be like Garland, you're welcome to give us a ring, 476-2800 in the 831 area code, or 1-800-655-5877. We got 15 more minutes of the show, and we'll take any call about technology. Call us up and ask us a question. Doesn't matter how silly it may seem, we'll probably answer it without giving you much trouble. The phone numbers again, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can go and email us by going to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. John, you've got...
As Kirby did, he's asking, what type of gaming do you allow at Lava Rock?
Well, that's a good question. What kind of gaming do you want?
Is it a family establishment?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you have certain hours where it's like from 9 p.m. to...
10?
whenever.
We haven't done extensive gaming stuff yet, and we haven't closed for gaming yet. Bring us ideas and let us know what you're interested in. We have tried to install some games on the systems with not very much success because of the security that we have to deploy on the site and the systems.
And I'm also assuming that a lot of these games, the reason why the question is coming from, who's the emailer?
Kirby.
The reason I'm sure why Kirby's asking is that a lot of these games are really dangerous. Or I should say,
they're violent.
They're dangerous for the characters. and they're not exactly necessarily, they're very bloody. Some of these games are very bloody. And of course, there's a lot of X-rated stuff as well. So I'm assuming you're going to try to kind of curb that to make sure that the place can have a four-year-old walk in at any time, kind of thing.
During normal business hours, that's absolutely correct. After hours, if somebody wants to rent the whole place and do something like that,
you're in for
that. I don't know about the X-rated, but the bloody stuff, if they want to do that, that's reasonable. We'll consider that.
Well, great. Email Kirby, thank you for the email. And from Seaside Bruce, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, I'm on. Yeah.
You're on.
I have a short political rant for Geek.
Uh-oh. All right, your time.
Basically, we got the election coming up. A lot of states and counties and stuff have started seriously thinking about implementing voting machines. And there's one brand, Diebold, is based on Windows. Now, all of us being geeks, we all know what Windows means as far as security. But now there's a, not the Diebold machine, but the central tabulator. And it has been determined highly vulnerable to fraud and somebody going in and changing the results.
Diebold is like, if you want to talk about how to do polling wrong, Diebold is the company you want to talk about. Miles, you know a little bit about Diebold. What kind of things have they done that just seems a little incorrect for a company that's offering such a major public service?
Well, they have the database running on an Access database.
You're kidding me.
I don't know if it still is. That was the original implementation. That was the one where it got into the news. When someone actually blew the whistle on them saying that things were going wrong and brought out the memos, they tried to put a cease and desist order, at which point a bunch of college students basically just distributed the info as widely as possible so that the message would get out there. Basically it's been a textbook case of things you don't do when you're trying to make a fair election.
If you go into a polling place and a Diebold machine is being used, what do you do?
Can you ask for pencil and paper?
Yeah, can you go, I can't touch computers, I have a sensitivity to radiation, and just go medical
reason. Well, that's the whole problem.
Yeah, that is. That is a serious problem. Miles, do you know the answer to that? Any of the geeks here?
I
know
the answer to that.
All right, so what you're asking then, Bruce, is geeks cover this topic. Handle this.
And my
have somebody on. Do it.
My suggestion. The other part is there's a website, blackboxvoting.org, has a lot of this detailed. And the story is not as bad as you say it is. It's worse. But the underlying problem is that as geeks, we pat ourselves on the back. We're so smart. And politicians are so dumb. My political rant is that we've got to get involved. This stuff does not work very well without us being involved. And this is one of the things that can happen. What's voting worth? What's private ballot worth? Well, that's pretty much a fundamental thing that part of the machinery that makes our society work.
Bruce, yeah. I personally feel this is an important topic to cover, and since I'm controlling a large voice of the geeks in the Monterey Bay area, I will cover this show. We'll do at least one show on this.
Okay.
And maybe I'll talk about doing some other stuff with Talk of the Bay, which is the shows going across the rest of the week on GeekSpeak. We definitely do political stuff on there. Talk with at least a representative and kind of do this as a two-parter, the technology and the political aspects to voting systems. I think it's a great suggestion, Bruce, and thank you very much for the call.
Okay. I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, laying down the smackdown with DD giving us a clue stick here is there
Miles,
is.
Miles, I didn't understand that entire sentence.
Sorry.
But you said DD, so I know you're talking about our friend DD in New York.
Yeah, like geek jargon here.
Okay.
This is like slash
that
not
speak. That was geek jargon.
Yeah, slash not speak.
That was MTV. Go on.
There is an option for if you don't want to use a electronic voting machine. Unfortunately, you can't do it just when you show up to the polling place. Absentee ballot. If you absolutely want to have it in pencil and paper, send in an absentee ballot.
I thought absentee ballots weren't looked at.
What? Sure, the ones from overseas have been historically overlooked. But,
but they're statistically insignificant, so aren't we saying the same thing?
Right, exactly.
Isn't that due to numbers of people who do that?
Yes.
Yeah, so if there's a sufficient number of people who have a problem with electronic voting and they're really worried about the issue, about one way or another, do an absentee ballot. It works just as well.
The thing is, Miles, if they're statistically not, if absentee ballots are small enough for the statistically not usable, therefore they're not looked at, and we're saying on KOSP, use an absentee ballot, we're taking people that listen to KOSP and suggesting they go into a system that doesn't get looked at as much. Therefore, their vote's not going to be as counted.
But you're
as
saying
well.
Statistically valid. If a whole bunch of people added to the absentee ballot pool, then you end up with something more statistically valid, right? You end up with higher representation.
Yeah, but not necessarily in this election.
Well, I guess I would chime in and say I'm all for electronic voting because I think it'll save the voting process money. I think it can make it more efficient.
Definitely, if it's done right.
I think one of the things that's major problematic is the amount of energy and cost associated with voting. And so I'd love to see that reduced.
All right.
I think,
so you support it?
technology. I think there is no question that it has to go that way for the language reasons and the other reasons. I just don't think we have anything efficient enough to be able to tally votes
appropriately. And Bruce's call, and prior to that, Garland's call, I believe, the issue of geeks have to be involved in this. Of course, they're going to be involved. Companies are most technology companies are founded by geeks as well. But from a perspective of understanding the technology, it's kind of complicated. And if we're going to rely on this system, it would be nice to have a foundation that we all feel is honest and accurate and a good system to use.
Well, I would say too that I'm less concerned about open source as much as a review process. Uh-huh. So I think there needs to be a significant review process,
right.
That's much more important than looking at the code.
Perhaps they should move to something more proprietary that is not connected with PCs, or Macintosh, or Linux at all.
But definitely has an open face to it, and that you know how it works.
I mean, look at ATM. We all use ATMs for money,
right?
And we certainly don't want to get ripped off, and we don't want people getting into our accounts. So if we could take that same type of technology and move it towards voting, it seems to make a lot of sense to me.
But that's a really great point, because nobody's concerned about the ATM. But
anymore.
You're getting $300 out of that thing all the time, and it's going directly into your account.
Right.
But you're
theoretically
concerned about voting.
Right. Yeah, interesting.
So. Which, incidentally, a lot of ATMs run on OS2. Because you were talking about proprietary.
Talk about it's frightening.
We got calls lining up. We're totally filled up, so we're going to try to power through them a little bit. From Bonnie Doon, Jerry, welcome to GeekSpeak. Oh, let me pull you up here, Jerry.
Hi.
Welcome to GeekSpeak. What's your question?
Hi. Well, folks, I'm going to keep voting by absentee. You guys can help sort it out. Until then, I'm voting absentee and writing it in with a pencil.
All right. Good, Jerry.
My question is... my geek question. I have a Mac, and when I went to system 922, the thing will not boot from disks anymore. I used to clean up my machine using Norton Disk Doctor and check things out. And to do that, you have to boot from the disk, and it won't do it.
And you're holding the C key down?
Pardon?
Are you holding the C key down when you boot?
Yes.
What kind of Mac is it?
iMac 500. Megahertz, my iMac.
Gray or color?
It's gray.
Okay.
I don't remember which model it is.
That's okay. It's pretty new.
You have an older version of Norton then, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Did you do a firmware update when you reinstalled the new OS?
Because I did not.
It's strange. It shouldn't be affecting, because when you stick a CD in there, it totally happens prior to the hard drive getting touched. So the idea that a change in the operating system, which is just changing the hard drive, could affect how that works.
That's why I was asking you to do a firmware update, because if you did update the firmware, then it could possibly have made it where that older version of Norton would no longer boot.
Could that firmware have happened without his knowledge? Or the USB drivers done before that? Because maybe it's a USB thing. Maybe the keyboard's not initializing in time.
That's possible. Yeah.
Because something has to run the USB connection. I'm not sure if that comes off the hard drive or not. What I would do, though, is get a new version of Norton. If you can borrow a newer version of Norton from a friend to make sure that it's going to work prior to doing it, that would be the best bet.
Yeah, if you could find one. They're probably all for System 10 now.
Well, the thing is, you could use a System 10 Norton, because Norton's just going to check the file system. It's going to be able to be okay on that.
Are you getting an error when it tries to boot up? Or is it just not booting up? It's just ignoring the disk.
It ignores it.
Maybe the disk got damaged.
You could try. There's a separate keyboard command you could try. Command Option Shift Delete.
Command Option Shift Delete.
Wait, this is starting to sound like a PC.
Which basically it disables the internal SCSI chain, and so it has to boot off the CD. It starts with
not SCSI ID.
Hold down those buttons.
Command Option Shift Delete on startup.
Yeah.
It's a holdover from the old SCSI days.
The command is the little clover leaf thing, right?
Right. It's Apple, Option, Shift, Delete.
And don't chew gum while you do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck.
I'll get out of the way for the next people.
All that does is it tells it, don't boot off the internal drive. Look for a CD-ROM drive.
From Monterey, Kenji, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, I had a comment on your previous PowerPoint caller. The latest version of Microsoft Office on Windows, if you go to their website, no longer supports QuickTime.
Good to know. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay.
All right.
It's a feature.
Time to re-encode that video.
That's right. Time to re-encode.
Well, see, our advice was good.
Carrie from SoCal, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey there. I have a Mac G3, a turquoise one, mm-hmm. and I turned it on a couple of days ago after not having it on for about a week. and I heard a little squeak, and then I smelled some electrical burning stuff.
A little squeak. Oh, your rodent got squished.
I guess so.
And then
but
a burning smell.
It looks clean in there.
And then a burning smell.
Yeah. And everything's okay now?
No. I have two monitors, and when I tried to start it up from like a CD or anything like that from Norton, which, by the way, I have 9.2.2, and I use Norton One System Works 1.0.2.
Okay, thank
for
you.
That other guy.
The main monitor's not coming on?
It's coming on, but get a little arrow and a blank screen.
A little arrow?
Yeah, in the corner. In
make
upper,
sure you unplug the other monitor. I'm wondering if it's defaulting to to one monitor, but then it's not driving it because it doesn't have the proper drivers to drive both monitors.
Yeah, unplug the second driver monitor. I'm amazed that you heard a squeak and a pop and a burning smell and you're still booting. Yeah. I mean, you're still seeing a screen. That's phenomenal.
The burning smell is definitely scary.
What that sounded like to me is a capacitor popping.
Uh-huh.
They do that sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And normally that's a monitor capacitor and the monitor's gone. So is your second monitor coming on?
Yeah.
But your primary monitor just comes on with a little arrow on it.
Yeah, it's sort of greenish.
Sort of greenish.
Yeah, that it's coming up, but it's kind of green.
That monitor's dead.
Oh, okay.
Just make the secondary monitor your primary monitor.
Okay.
And try to boot up and see what happens.
All right.
Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
We are out of time, unfortunately. We're not going to be able to take Steve's call. Steve, if you'd like to stay online, we'll help you in just a moment. You're listening to Geek Speak. Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. The geeks today were Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and, John Tracy. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Thank you all for participating in Geek Speak. Our guest today, Jeff Karras, owner and operator of Lava Rock Internet Cafe. You can find out more information, www.lavarockcafe.com. It's on Seabright, at the end of Seabright, kind of, near the railroads, across from Seabreeze in Santa Cruz. It's open 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day. Jeff Karras, thank you very much for being on GeekSpeak.
Thank you.
Sunday, September 5th, 11 a.m., Nadja Salerno-Sonnenberg performs the world premiere of Violin Concerto by Clarice Assad. Saint-Saëns, Introduction a Rondo Capriccioso, Opera 28, 1863. The concert begins with a conversation and performance with Nadja, Clarice, and Marin Alsop.